is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you for joining us today. A group of world leaders are meeting in Uganda's capital, Kampala, for the 19th summit of the Non-Aligned Movement.
We, the Non-Aligned countries, have chosen to be not to participate or to take part or to be impartial in what was the Cold War at the time.
Uganda's State Minister for Foreign Affairs, Henry Okello Oryem. Congolese artist is using his art to highlight the issue of child labor in the Democratic Republic of the Congo's mining industry.
The people who are doing all this child labor, like, it's just not, it wasn't like really, really beautiful for me to actually like experience as a Congolese that I felt like I had to talk about that story. And that's literally the one that started the whole thing.
Rafael Bahindwa is a young award-winning artist based in Atlanta. He says that the Democratic Republic of Congo, that's DRC, is one of the world's most resource-rich countries with vast reserves of minerals such as coltan, but it's faced with numerous challenges, including the widespread use of child labor in both the formal and informal mining sector. But first, let's hear from you, our listeners. The term black tax originated in South Africa, and it refers to the financial responsibility faced on many family members who experience what is known as upward mobility. That's you make it in life. And when you do that, you have the responsibility to help out your relatives who are less fortunate. Often it's the successful person who is the first one in their family or a poor family to graduate from college or attain a high-paying job. So as we start off the new year, we wanted to find out from you if this was a common practice in other parts of Africa. Here is what you said.
Actually, it's once or twice a month, me receiving money or sending, both ways I should say. Yes, so if I make it in life, I would still love if I would send my relatives back home some money. At least they could make plans and budget for themselves rather than me buying them something and sending to them. They will still expect to get money from me because we still believe in money, and that's our behavior. We believe in money.
I send money to my relatives and friends whenever they need it. I don't know how many times in a month or a year. The last time I received money from my relatives is when I was at school. I used to receive money in terms of fees and pocket money.
I usually send money to my family and relatives once a month, and I don't really necessarily expect them to give back any money to me, so I hardly receive money from my relatives. And I just feel that once you've made it in life, once you've made it successfully, it's always a good gesture to always appreciate each and every single person that just stood by you, especially family.
Radio in full effect.
Up front, let's go!
Yo.
You are listening to Up Front on the Voice of America.
Can you hear me?
With Jackson Bugatti.
Many thanks to all of you for sending in your opinions to the question of the week. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. And let's start off in Kampala, Uganda, where a number of world leaders are meeting for the 19th summit of the Non-Aligned Movement. The movement is a group of states that are not formally aligned with or against any major power bloc. It was created during the Cold War as a response to the bipolar division of the world into the Eastern and the Western Bloc, the Western Bloc led by the United States and the Eastern Bloc led by the Soviet Union. The week-long gathering, headed by Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni, will address a number of global issues while promoting cooperation among member states. For more on the meeting, I reached Uganda's State Minister for Foreign Affairs, Henry Okello Oryem, and he tells me that while the geopolitical landscape has evolved since its Cold War inception, he says that the Non-Aligned Movement continues to exist as a forum for dialogue and cooperation among its member nations, while emphasizing the importance of respecting the sovereignty and territorial integrity of all countries.
The relevance of NAM is that NAM was established by countries who are in the southern atmosphere, and countries who were started during the Cold War, when you had the Eastern countries and the Western countries going through what was called the Cold War, and we, the non-aligned countries, have chosen to be not to participate or to take part or to be impartial in what was the Cold War at the time. Mm. Our view was that the Cold War was polarizing. The Cold War was alienating countries, and the Cold War was reversing development, and the Cold War was, amongst things, not creating equality and justice to other countries who are not part of the two big powers that were fighting the Cold War.
Okay. Now, there have been some questions surrounding the non-aligned movement's ability to adapt to the changing geopolitical landscape, especially after the end of the Cold War. And some say that the movement has become less relevant. How do you address these questions about its relevance?
Well, that is partly true, or fundamentally true. That's why we are glad that finally the leadership under President Museveni, very progressive, revolutionary leader, long-term and very experienced in international matters, and with highly respected in the region, highly respected the world over. We think that this is the time for President Museveni to redirect NAM for what it stood, make it more visible, make it more assertive, make it be respected in the international world order, and let it be on the high table with the other key players.
Okay.
The world is changing. We as NAM countries are demanding to be highly respected, our sovereignty and independence to be respected, and hence we're glad that this has come at a time when Uganda is leadership, and I'm sure that President Museveni will be able to establish a new NAM, a type that has not been seen for many years.
Now, how does the non-aligned movement handle conflicts among its member states? What are some of the mechanisms that you have within this conference?
Well, we handle conflicts like all other conflicts the world over. All countries around the world over have regional organizations and regional mechanisms in resolving their problems. And we expect those regional mechanisms to be the front line in dealing with conflicts amongst these non-aligned countries. So, like in other places, before it escalates to the higher forum required in the United Nations and other key players, we normally expect the local, the regional organizations to be able to be the front line in dealing with that resolution of the conflict.
And how does the movement engage with other international organizations? Talk to us a little bit in details in terms of engaging with organizations like the United Nations to promote principles that contribute to discussions on global issues.
First of all, we're all members of the United Nations. And this particular number will also be attended by the Secretary General of the UN. Most of the principles behind the NAM, that set up the NAM and set up the G77 is more or less no different from the UN principles on human rights, on equality and justice for human beings, on the issue of democracy and the principle of democracy, and so on and so forth, just like it's right in the UN Charter. So NAM is not very far off from the UN Charter, but more or less it emphasizes and is based on implementing what has been the basic principle of the UN Charter.
We are chatting with Uganda State Minister for Foreign Affairs, Mr. Henry Okello Oryem. Now, the movement was started almost, 70 years ago now, sometime in 1955. How would you say it has changed over the years?
I think now the dynamics, I think NAM is going to change a lot. NAM will change henceforth because of the new leadership that are coming in place. Most of the leadership who were members of NAM were not the leaders at the time of independence. or did not participate in the struggle for independence, or even were not in leadership at the time of the Cold War, so they are not touched really by the Cold War. They are not very conversant with practically what the Cold War was. So I think they're going to bring in a new dynamism on how NAM should move forward and be more progressive, address contemporary issues of climate change, deal with issues of digitalization, deal with issues of trade and investment the world over. The modern contemporary issues that are being dealt with these days, I think that is the way NAM will move forward due to the new group of leadership that are now in place and were not there at the time of Cold War.
And what is the significance of the fact that it's being held in Uganda and that President Museveni is taking a leadership role of this organization?
We thank God that it's taking place in Uganda. For many years, and until recently, there's been a misconception, particularly from the West, that about Uganda, Africa, and the region, as if the country is infested with disease, wars, and all kinds of conflicts. I think that the international attention now being drawn to Uganda and the amount of delegations that come to Uganda will give us an opportunity to showcase Uganda to the world for what it is, full of beauty, natural beauty, full of a friendly atmosphere, and a country which is secure for both investment, tourism, and visits, as opposed to the picture portrayed by some Western countries and by some Western press as a country you should never even touch, go or visit. Otherwise, you'll get some sickness or disease that will never be cured, or you'll be killed in the road, or because there's always conflict in this country. Uganda is a beautiful country, an island of peace in the region, with a fantastic climate and opportunities for investment, better than most countries. So this type of showcasing our country for really what it stands for.
What are some of the global events currently that happened in the last couple of years that kind of precipitated the resurgence of the non-aligned movement? What is this in response to?
I think currently what is happening following the last 2 days, NAM has been particularly the debate for the last 2 days. And the preoccupation of the last 2 days has been issues relating to Israel and Palestine. This is a contemporary issue which is discussed in all forums and has also been discussed heavily and extensively in NAM, in senior officials meeting the last 2 days. And I think it will dominate the meeting up to the end of until the summit level. We're also dealing with issues of human rights, issues of democracy, issues of climate change. So these are the contemporary issues that are being dealt with and is the core of discussion in NAM.
Mr. Minister, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us.
Thank you very much. I wish you the best.
Thank you very
much. And you're welcome to book anytime.
Thank you so much. That was Uganda State Minister for Foreign Affairs, Henry Okello Oryem. I reached him in Kampala, Uganda. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Around the clock, The Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. Congolese visual artist Raphael Bahindwa moved from Kinshasa to Atlanta to further his education in the art at the world-famous Savannah College of Art and Design. And a year later, Bahindwa's hard work won him recognition as Atlanta's Artist of the Year. He says that he wants to use his latest exhibit titled Little Kings to advocate and bring awareness to the issue of child labor and the plight of thousands of young Congolese children working in the DRC's informal and formal mining industry. Bahindo starts off by telling us some of the artists that inspire him.
Man, a lot of artists from different cultures. Definitely Japanese artists, Masashi Kishimoto, Takashi Murakami, Jean-Michel Basquiat. If you guys heard about Jean-Michel, is one of my top favorite, actually, because he's that one guy who just, like, as a black person, that inspired you to just see that one black guy who actually went there and made it. It just make you feel like you can actually do it too, you know. And Salvador Dali, the thing that really inspired me about Dali was his surrealism. So that was, like, I think my three inspirations: Japanese art, Jean-Michel Basquiat, and Dali.
So, Raphael, we are here in your studio here in Atlanta. You're showing us your new exhibit, Little Kings. Talk to us about what inspired you to start this exhibit and what you want people to know about the conditions of young people that are working in the mining industry in the DRC.
Little Kings is a series that I started in 2020 during the pandemic, because I really wanted to talk about this. Because during the pandemic, I really had to sit down and search more about the coltan and all those minerals that we have back home. And no, like, during my research, I realized that the people who are doing all this child labor, like, it's just not, it wasn't, like, really, really beautiful for me to actually, like, experience as a Congolese, that I felt like I had to talk about that story. And that's literally the one that started the whole thing. And this painting is just, we were talking about earlier about, like, suffering, them asking for help. This one, it was, like, this little movement, this little action that just shown that we are going through it. You know, just him holding his head and he being, his entire body being in a frame, it can definitely tell you, like, a little bit of sadness, which is, like, a big sadness, actually, that's going on right now.
I see the sadness in the face of this young man.
Oh, yeah.
But I also see buildings.
Yeah.
Are these high-rises?
They are high-rises. Yeah, that's good.
What is the connection here?
The connection here is just, like, you know, those kids are the one building the cities that we see all over the world, because we have a very important mineral back home. If you guys know about it, the coltan is just something that's building city all over the places, that I feel like I had to add it there, because you're seeing the sadness, but you're seeing buildings.
Such a powerful.
It is, yeah. Man, it is. And the fact that it's just like, this, yeah, the one doing the kind of like the dirty job, yeah, to get it. So.
Powering our cell phones.
Powering the cell phones, the Teslas.
Yeah. This one turned away his face.
Exactly.
From the building. Is there a symbolism to that?
The symbolism is just like, they don't know what to do, honestly, because they need help from us.
Yeah.
And they kind of, like, turn away from us. It's just, like, another way to show sadness, right? It's like, I ask for help. You guys, I feel like you guys don't understand what's going on here. I turn my back. That's what I wanted to show, because, like, right here, you think sadness. This whole series about really sadness and how I can express it.
Bazabana, I guess the whole series is called Bazabana.
In Lingala, like, you know, Bazabana is, they are kids. So this series is just to let people know, hey, they are kids, they are the future of our country, look at what's going on, and they are asking for help.
Yeah.
Right here, you can see help us.
Yeah.
You can see all those big logos, which Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, the dollar sign, you know, LG, Apple, all those big companies are the one using those minerals that are very important for the world, you know, and the one who are taking all those, you know, or doing all those dirty jobs for kids. And Bazabana is just to tell people, hey, they're really kids. Hey, be careful out there, you know.
This surrealism.
Oh, yeah.
When you're talking about this young man is flying over, like, a city landscape.
City landscape.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, now, what are you trying to capture with this one?
I'm trying to express freedom.
Mm.
Like, if I really got to think about those kids having freedom, I see them, like, fly around. This is the way I express freedom. It's like flying around those cities that, in my opinion, they help build somehow, and they're flying over to just express the freedom that they are free. You know, this is just like a dreamy, you know, it didn't happen yet, but if it happened, this is, I feel like, what those kids are dreaming about, that we can be so free that we can just fly.
Yeah.
And I wanted to kind of, like, show you in this piece right here.
Another one here with that intense look, background of the cityscape.
This one I really wanted to mimic Bazabana.
Yeah.
I wanted to kind of mimic that same type of vibe by going a little bit larger and then have a, you know, a background in the
back. What are they holding in their hands?
He's holding, like, the globe. It's like a very abstract version of the globe, like a very dark globe, and he's holding it in his hand to show that this is, and if you really look at it, it's the African, you know, this is the shape right there.
Right.
And he's holding it to protect it.
And this one is the first time you show an adult
in
this series.
Yep.
I see an adult carrying the the little child, and the cityscape still in the background. What is the relationship between these two people in this story?
It's to show that the adults in our country cares too. You know, they cares about our kids, but sometimes they don't know what to do because they need.
I feel like
they are powerless because if you look at many things that's going on, like the elders, they know it, they feel it, but sometimes they don't have much power to help their own kids, you know, to create a change for them.
Yeah.
So I feel like just to put them in a piece, it's a way to show that it's not just about kids, it's about the people too, because they feel powerless, and that's a tragic thing for a human being to feel powerless, you know.
Being powerless.
It's not a good thing.
This is the mother, it looks like she's walking in the mine, helping the young man. As we know, these mines also, as much as they have the kids, they also have adults in there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is actually like a real story. This is Maman Nathalie and her son, King. Her son actually named King, and I wanted to get this real story because this one is an image of Maman Nathalie and her kid actually doing...
Working in the mine,
doing that dirty job, you know. So I wanted to capture that one moment of Maman Nathalie and her son, King.
Maman Nathalie also looks very helpless.
Very, very helpless, and she's obligated to do it. You know, it's not just kids who are doing it. It's like, it's mothers, it's... fathers, grandfathers, his babies in the house, is everybody who doing that, and it's not a cool thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you titled this one, c'est notre terre, in French, it's our land. Yeah.
It's our land, and we have to say, and we have to recognize it, and we have to let people know that all those minds is from us, and c'est notre terre, it's our land.
Yeah.
You cannot just like, you know, take it and make our kids suffer. Like, you know, it doesn't look good.
Raphael, this is a very powerful series, man.
Man, I really appreciate you. Like, this is for us, man.
Yeah.
I'm really doing it for
us,
really.
Absolutely, keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Are you planning to take this on the road at some point?
Really,
around the U.S.?
No, we have to. Yeah. Not even around the U.S., everywhere. Like Germany, London, France, Italy, everywhere in the world, I want to bring
all those cities that are
everywhere
benefiting from
everywhere. China, Korea, Japan, everywhere I want to bring it because it's a goal for every artist to bring the story from your home, you know, all over the place.
Have you thought of what you're going to do next after this series?
Oh man, we're just gonna focus on this series a little bit more because until those kids are not free, I don't know if I'm gonna like stop painting them.
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna keep doing it.
For sure.
Nah, thank you.
If there's ever been a term activist art, I think this qualifies for that.
And Jean-Michel Basquiat is an example.
Yeah,
like we were talking about him, he's like that one inspiration.
Absolutely.
No, thank you.
Brother.
No, thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
That was Congolese visual artist Raphael Bahindwa. He was talking about his latest exhibit titled Little Kings that is currently showing in Atlanta, Georgia. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1. Then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. A new report by Human Rights Watch says that 2023 was a consequential year for human rights suppression and wartime atrocities, especially in the Horn of Africa. The rights group blames regional blocs and the international community for not doing enough to protect civilians. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo has more on this report.
Governments in the Horn of Africa dealt with large-scale humanitarian crises in 2023. With no checks on abuses in Sudan and Ethiopia, civilians withstood the worst of atrocities committed in the name of war, the report by Human Rights Watch says. Letitia Bader is a deputy director in the Africa division at the Rights Group.
We saw blatant flouting of very basic laws of war, human rights law by governments.
In Sudan, a war that broke out last April between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces has killed thousands and displaced millions of civilians, sparking a humanitarian crisis. The report says the warring parties repeatedly used heavy weapons in densely populated areas and that instead of treating this crisis as a priority, influential governments and regional bodies have pursued short-term gains at the expense of rights-driven solutions.
Time and again, we saw how there was limited diplomatic willingness at the regional level, but also at the international level, to really press for the sort of accountability which is needed to end these cycles of impunity.
Several countries, including the United States and Saudi Arabia, tried to broker ceasefires in Sudan but weren't successful. In Ethiopia, after parties to the conflict in the northern part of the country signed a cessation of hostilities agreement in late 2022, which Bader says resulted in improvement in the human rights and humanitarian situations in parts of Tigray, the limited international efforts to promote meaningful accountability and an end to abuses quickly dissipated, the report says.
Over the last 6 months in particular, we've seen a deteriorating rights situation and fighting in the Amhara region. Here again, we are seeing the impact on the civilian community. We've documented cases of extrajudicial killings, sexual violence, but also the devastating impact that this ongoing cycles of fighting is having on civilians' ability to access basic care.
Fighting erupted in Tigray in late 2020 after the Tigray People's Liberation Front attacked army bases across the region. The attacks initially overwhelmed the federal military, which later mounted a counteroffensive alongside Eritrean soldiers and forces from the neighboring region of Amhara. In 2021 alone, 5.1 million Ethiopians became internally displaced, a record for the most people internally displaced in any country in any single year at the time, according to the Council on Foreign Relations. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to our guests and to you for tuning in. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms at VOA Africa. We are on Facebook, on Instagram, and on YouTube, where you can watch our videos. Remember to like, to share, and to subscribe. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great week ahead, Africa.
Hello, I am Chinua Ruafo in Washington. Starting next week, VOA Africa brings you Africa in Brief. Roundups of the latest news from across the continent. We'll start your day off with the news you need when you need it. Find Africa in Brief at 0400, 0500 and 0600 UTC, wherever you listen to your favorite VOA Africa radio programs.
Has social media improved your life, or is it more of a distraction? We'd love to hear from you. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, plus one, 202-258-3076. 3076. Can't wait to hear from you.